Now let's move briefly onto the other side of the continent, to West Africa. West Africans had been major players in the Sahara gold trade since at least the end of the first millennium AD. By that time, there were regular caravans, camel caravans, crossing the Sahara. So much gold came from West Africa that in Christopher Columbus's time, it is said that at least two-thirds of Europe's gold came from the kingdom of Mali in sub-Saharan Africa. And when the king of Mali made a pilgrimage to Mecca in the 14th century, it is said that the price of gold in Cairo, which was, of course, a major caravan terminus, was depressed for months. West Africa was drawn increasingly into the European orbit after the Portuguese rounded the bulge of Africa in the 1430s. Why were they doing this? They were exploring the coast because they wanted to bypass the Saharan routes controlled by Islamic merchants and obtain gold directly. They were also curious over what lay over the horizon and were also serving God through exploration. They were round the bulge of Africa in the 1430s. In 1488, Bartolomeo Diaz rounded the Cape of Good Hope at the southern tip of Africa. By 1497-8, Vasco da Gama had landed at Mozambique, and Bombassa had cajoled an Islamic pilot to sail with him and cross to Goa in India on the wings of the monsoon winds. During the next four centuries, Africans were drawn increasingly into a much wider economic world, fueled by insatiable desires on the part of people all over the world for raw materials and also for slaves. But let it not be thought that the Africans were passive in this trade. As they had been in earlier times, in the stone towns, at Great Zimbabwe, at Aksum, African rulers were aggressive in seizing new opportunities and in acquiring wealth and political prestige. In this, these later rulers were merely acting like their predecessors, pioneers in a world of interconnectedness. And, as any historian will tell you, one of the catalytic events of recent centuries has been Christopher Columbus's journey to the New World, which resulted in the importation of all kinds of Native American crops, like maize, which transformed the economies of Africa and in a real sense fueled the tremendous economic interactions which went on between Africa and an increasingly industrial world right up into the 20th century. So you can see that the history of African states, of the coast and the interior, is intimately tied to this web of interconnectedness from Europe southward across the Sahara, or on the wings of the monsoon winds across the Indian Ocean, as far as India and China and beyond. It is an interaction, not a passive receipt, not a passive giving, but parties on both sides of this interaction, in good faith, filling needs, needs of prestige of African chiefs. A single seashell of a certain type could be worth several ivory tusks in the far interior, for example, because this object had great prestige. And it all began, as we said earlier in the lecture, with the camel revolutionizing desert travel, with Meroe, the terminus of the caravan trade of the Nile. We showed how Aksum took over the control of the Red Sea trade, only to collapse in the face of expanding Islam. We described briefly the distinctive African and Islamic civilization of the East African coast on the fringes of the Indian Ocean world. And we journeyed to Great Zimbabwe in southern Africa to make the point that Africans maximized their opportunities to acquire wealth and prestige from outside, a trend which continued after European contact. And we'll pursue this theme of interconnectedness further once we've analyzed the origins of Chinese civilization in Lecture 28.